I am Cindy. I'm an alcoholic. So I have 8 years sober, and my sobriety date was November 16, 2011. So I'm supposed to start at the beginning. So I'm originally from Pennsylvania. It's a small kind of mountain town outside of Philadelphia. If you ever saw The Deer Hunter, that was the town. It was very small. It was so small, like when we would come home, you know, on our weekends from college, we would start looking at the other cars because you would recognize people, you know, in the other cars. But there was a bar in every corner. You know, everybody worked at Bethlehem Steel or steel companies and that. So it was very kind of blue collar, you know, hard working, you know, environment and stuff. And I really didn't, you know, my parents didn't drink. My father drank. But he would have just, you know, kind of one beer when he came home from work. I didn't come from a family where they were active alcoholics and wild parties or anything like that. But he did have his beer after work. My mother didn't drink. My stepfather, really, they just drank on occasion. Wine at Christmas or something. But I did start drinking when I was, 15. I think I was 15. I started. I was just like in ninth grade, and it was a friend. We were at some company picnic for the local hospital, and they would always have a keg of beer, clams and smoked corn on the cob. You know, it was like a standard thing they did up there. So my friend worked for the hospital, and he would just sneak, you know, pitchers of beer over to us who were, you know, the folks. It was me and some friends hiding in the woods. But that's kind of like the first recollection I have of, like, really drinking and kind of like, you know, the way it made you feel, like, this is just great, you know? And then I remember, like, you know, in high school, my parents had one of these little, whatever, counter things, I think, to make it look nice, that they had, you know, liqueurs and drinks and stuff. But they had some kind of pink Catawba wine. And I remember my girlfriend and I would, like, sneak the wine, to drink the wine, and then we'd fill it with water, you know, as long as it had that pink, you know, color to it. But, and then I went into college, but I didn't think I had a drinking problem or anything. It was just, like, occasional and stuff. I was going to college. I was going to go to college. But I do remember, it got kind of, you know, more and more so, you know, partying, you know, it, by the time I was in like 11th grade of high school, and this summer we would go and, you know, get kegs of beer and go and hang out at the railroad tracks or someplace out in the woods and stuff. And, you know, it just increased more, you know, over the years. And of course, when I went to college, it was like full on out, and I would surround myself with people that drank because if you didn't drink, like, you know, I couldn't understand, like, what kind of fun is that? You know, you had to like party and be with people that like to drink and like to party. College was like a full blowout. And, you know, I remember, though, too, when I didn't really get to college on my own accord. I didn't have that path of going to college. I had to go, like, as a probation for the first semester. So it was kind of like a probation because I never really took college courses. And I had to go for, like, the first semester, like, probationary. And then we had a semester off, and then we started in the second semester. But I remember, you know, when I came home, at this point, my mother and my stepfather were getting divorced, and I basically had the house to myself. And it was a summer or something. But I remember I had parties at the house, and, we'd do shots of tequila, and it was, you know, everybody and their brother would be there, all my drinking buddies. And I remember having that thought, but it didn't come till I had some sobriety later. Like, it was a clear thought, like I remembered it. I was cleaning up from a party, and I thought, I wonder if I'm an alcoholic, you know, and the next thought was, nah, you can't be an alcoholic. They drink every day, you know, but then when I thought about it, I thought, well, you are, you know, the next thought was like, I am drinking every day, you know, I was going out to bars at night, and it's kind of like, well, I am drinking every day. I remember I threw that thought out of my mind, like, No, you know, because it's like, oh, God, I hope not, because I really like to drink, you know? That was really like a fearful time, you know? So I go, you know, I went to college. I didn't want to, like, stay in Pennsylvania because it was a very small town. You know, going to college, I went to, like, Bloomsburg, which was, like, a, you know, a town north of where I came from. And, you know, it was like at least meeting different people and not from our little enclosed town where everybody knew one another. So I really didn't want to like stay in the town. So I came home for like a year and then I like relocated to Atlanta. I also thought, you know, if I get married and have children, I want to be at a place that my kids have something to do, you know, because there's only drinking up there that you would do. So I didn't, you know, want them to go to the railroad tracks with a keg of beer. I thought it would have be more opportunity for them. That didn't work out either. But anyway, so I, you know, I moved to Atlanta and, you know, ended up meeting my husband, getting married and everything. You know, we bought a little home over in the Canton area and, it was a little tiny house and we added on to it, or he added on to it. It was just like a 2-bedroom living room, kitchen area, very tiny. And he added like 2 extra bedrooms, a living room, a garage area. It was, you know, he made it into a 4-bedroom, kind of 2-bath house. You know, it took years and stuff, but, you know, he knew how to do a lot of the work and he had friends that knew how to do a lot of the work, so they kind of traded out. You know, we had 2 children. I have a daughter and a son. And so, you know, we have this house and we're living there and everything's hunky dory and that. But my husband had, he was a binge drinker, so he could drink at times and be okay and just have one. And there were other times where he didn't know his limit. So he had, multiple DUIs over the course of our marriage. And they got progressively worse. It was, you know, the first was a DUI. The second was kind of like, I was in an accident, you know, where he kind of like bumped somebody, like a fender bender type thing, but he had been drinking. The third time was, I hit a construction, or a DOT vehicle, and I ran because I had been drinking. But he got off, you know, he always got off. There were some periods of time where he spent like 30 days in jail. One time it was 60 days in jail. But he would stop and we wouldn't drink. And, you know, and I was like of the impression like, you know, it was him that had the problem. You know, I didn't know anything. I've gone to Al-Anon too over the years, you know, because it was him that had the problem. I didn't have the problem. I still like to have my glass of wine every now and then. You know, I could like put it down. And that is one thing I found out about the disease. It's not really like how much you drink. It's how you drink. And that there's periods of time where you don't have to be drinking at all. But once it starts back up, it's full on out, you know? It starts back up and you start roller cycle or whatever. So he had multiple DUIs or whatever, but, you know, we had the house and we had the kids. And, in, July of 1995, we were actually getting involved with our local church too, and I was like teaching Vacation Bible School. And he was in the summer, you know, he worked landscaping, so of course they do a lot of their business in the summer. It's hot, and they would stay, you know, after work and have a beer or two, you know, and it was like with him, it's like, I know he was trying to connect with guys. It's like, that's fine if you stay as long as you just drink, you know, have Cokes or whatever. But anyway, that night he didn't get home right after work and stuff, and, I can remember hearing the sirens, and it was like 11 o'clock at night, and he was involved in a vehicular car accident, and he killed a woman, and he was drinking and driving. You know, and that was just, because I was still, of course, sick and not realizing I had a problem or whatever, but that was like just such a despairing, guilt-ridden, shameful period, you know, because I associated that, before I went to Al-Anon too, that I should have done something, that I should have kicked him out, that I could have done something to change, you know, to change that. And of course in Al-Anon now I realize like there's nothing I could have done. It's got to come from that person. you know, and he ended up getting convicted and served 12 years in jail. And I'll share this because he's not local. So he served 12 years in jail, and not only did he, like, you know, ruin somebody else's life, you know, took away a wife, took away a mother because they had a little girl, you know, ruined his family, lost his house that he built. But he moved to Alabama, and he thinks he can drink like normal people today. So that's the insidiousness of the disease, you know? It's like just not making that connection, you know? When he was in jail, you know, I didn't drink. I just was busy with raising the kids and going to soccer and, you know, doing the things I had to do. And again, it's kind of like, oh, I had the problem. He had the problem. I mean, I like to have my glass of wine, you know, but it was like always him that had the problem. The kids started getting older, of course, so they're out kind of doing their own things with their friends and that. And that's when I kind of started, you know, going back to hang out, you know, trying to have a life myself, and hooking up with, you know, girlfriends and that. So I know, you know, we used to meet up, like some old co-workers, we'd meet up at the Rusty Nail on Roswell Road, if anyone's familiar. But we would meet up there every now and then once, you know, at a bar. And of course, it was one of those, like, where it stopped, you know, I hadn't drank in years. I would drink on Friday nights, but I could see kind of like how this just spirals. So I went over there the one night, or the one time, and I, of course, you know, I'm just going to go over there and have one drink, you know, with the girls. And of course, that isn't what happens. You end up having four or five, six. And I came home, and of course, I got my first DUI. But of course, it was, I forget what I had, you know, I didn't go to jail or anything like that. And again, it was like, I thought everybody like drank. I thought everybody in the world drank. You know, you see it on TV, but it was because I was like hanging with everybody that drank. I didn't hang with people that didn't drink because what kind of fun was that? So that was my world. It's like everybody in the world drinks, right? So I ended up getting that DUI, you know, and during that period of time, you know, I was a sick individual. You know, looking back, it's like I made such bad decisions, and I lived in shame, you know, because I shared some of that guilt, like somehow I was responsible, you know, for what happened and stuff, and I shared a lot of guilt and, you know, related to that, that, you know, if I would have done something different. So my poor children, they really, it's kind of like they grew up with, you know, just a sick mother, you know, wanting to control everything and, you know, all the despair I was living. I was, you know, single and I was working like multiple jobs. You know, had to leave my kids home a lot to fend for themselves. It was just, you know, a very, very despairing, bad period. So as my kids got older, they started going out and doing their own things. And, of course, I started going, hanging out and drinking again. And, you know, of course, over the years, then it's like every weekend going out and, you know, drinking more and more. And I can remember at one point thinking, you know, getting like two cases of beer, you know, and thinking like, you know, is that enough? You know what I mean? Like to cover for like a weekend and stuff. Like, do I have enough? So you can see, you know what I mean? And I didn't think about it. And it was almost like, well, it's, you know, it's noon. It's a weekend. I'm not working. You know, it's kind of like it got earlier and earlier to start the partying, right? Because, you know, whatever I felt, whatever exasperation, anger, loneliness, sad, you know what I mean? Whatever crappy stuff that you didn't want to feel, it's kind of like, well, this will be, you know, gone in an instant, you know? But it was always there when you stopped, right? So it was always back. So I continued to do that, and then in 2000, I guess it was 2000. It was 2000, then I got pulled over for my second DUI. And by then, my kids had kind of moved out, you know, they were on their own independently, and so it was, you know, I had bought another house, you know, and the kids were living independently in their own place, and, you know, it had almost gotten to where it was party time. Like, I wasn't a mother, I was like a partier with my kids. You know, I remember when my daughter told me, you know, when she was expecting, you know, my grandson, my first grandchild, that the thought that crossed my mind is like, oh, but gosh, we're not going to be able to drink like we do in the summer at the pool. You know? It was really, that went through my mind. It was kind of like that was the first important thing. So fast forward, I get a second DUI, and I have to go to the DUI court program. And, you know, we had to go. It was a very stringent program. You had to do like 90 meetings in 90 days. You had to wear an ankle monitor. You had to go to DUI court, you know, once a month. You had to go to counseling on Wednesdays. You know, it was very stringent. They kept you running. You had to call every night to find out if you had to be tested the next day and then show up, you know, by 7 o'clock in Canton to be tested, make sure you didn't have any alcohol in your system, you weren't drinking. And I remember going through that just like, this is crazy, you know. And with all the other people in the program, you know, we're like, everybody's like, what is farce? This is a money-making scheme in Cherokee. You know, we're all in that kind of frame of denial. This is just a you know, money-making, and they're all in cahoots, and this is just bull crap. So, you know, we all had that kind of mindset. But I remember going to the meetings, and I was really against it because in my mind it was like, I'm not the alcoholic. Alcoholics, you know, they drink every day. They don't have a job. They live under the bridge and they wear a trench coat. You know, it's like I had a house. I had a job. I had a car. It's like that couldn't, you know, how could that even be? And I was very resistant, you know, because it would be like sitting in the meetings like, don't do that. Don't do that. Nope. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do, you know what I mean? There was nothing I related to. I was very, you know, resentful. But as time went by and I had to go to more and more meetings, all of a sudden it was like, I started thinking, you know, when people would share, it's like, well, I do that, you know, I react that way. I think that way, you know? And so I kind of, you know, some of the things it started resonating with me, like, you know, this may explain everything. You know, I can remember like going out partying one weekend and coming home. You know, and thinking like, what's wrong with me? You know, especially everything I had been through, like I had been through that. I'd been through the despair that caused, you know, and all the, you know, I remember just like sobbing your heart out, you know, and it was so deep in that. And it's kind of like, how could I now be out there doing the same thing, you know, that my husband had done that ended up, you know, in such a tragedy. So that's when I started really kind of opening my mind a little bit to listening to what you said. And, yeah, and it was one of those, it's like, I didn't want to be an alcoholic, but I knew deep in the recesses, like I was, from the time I questioned it when I was 20 years old. And it kind of explained everything, you know, the control issues, you know, my poor children. It's like, you know, trying to control work and my job and everybody in life, and everybody had to be in these little boxes or, you know, it just wasn't right, you know, the world was upset. You know, and the rages if things wouldn't go my way. I remember my son didn't bring home, the car when he was supposed to, and I took a golf club and like smashed his TV. You know? It's like, I'll show you. You know? I did some pretty ragey stuff, really. It was just kind of like, it was out of control. So I started in the program and, you know, it started changing, you know, I found a sponsor and started going through the steps. And, it really is just eye-opening. Because, you know, my whole life was, you know, trying to control things, and I would drink because I'd get exasperated because things were outside of my control or they weren't, you know, working right. It kind of just explained a lot on the way I used to think and, you know, what was different. And as you got more into it and went through the steps and over the years, then you learned a little bit more and you got a little bit more insight, like promises, like more will be revealed. You know, I can remember like thinking about like how my thinking changed too. It was, you know, before I always wanted you to think that I was like this sweet, nice, you know, just like a really sweet, nice girl and stuff. I was the Virgin Mary in my kindergarten class play. I like to bring that out. But that's how, you know, I was really mean. I was really mean and ornery and, you know, I was like mean-spirited and stuff. And that wasn't what I was like at all. And I remember, like, when people would ask me to do things, I would say, sure, yeah, I'll help you, yeah. because I wanted you to think I was nice and sweet, and like, oh, she's so sweet, she's so dependable. And at the same time, then when it came down to doing it, I didn't want to do it, and then I'd get a resentment, and then I'd blame you for asking me to do it, because I really, you know what I mean? Like, I really didn't want, and I would develop a resentment towards you, because it's like, I didn't want to do this to begin with, you know? And when I recognized that that thought process changed, that's when I thought, like, maybe I'm getting better, you know? Maybe some things are starting to click for me and stuff. So, you know, fast forward, and I'm probably going through this really, really quick. but, you know, I just learned a lot in the program. I was, you know, I got involved and, you know, did GSR work and worked, volunteered at the jail. Because I know it's like a lifelong, it is a lifelong disease. I know, you know, I get squirrely if I'm by myself for a couple of days alone. I'll always kind of have that. It's hard to change that thought process. That takes time. You know, it took a lot of time. And sometimes you don't recognize it. You know, there are times where your reactions to something change, and maybe that's when you recognize it. Like, wow, I'm not upset about that. If I was in my drinking days, I would have gone off, you know? And so now I have, you know, this, God has just graced me, you know, in this program. And I remember when I got my 9-month chip, I never saved a dime. And I always thought, I was going to only work till 59, you know, cause I wanted to retire. And I didn't have like anything in the bank. Again, you know, that thought process of you can't even think clearly when you're in the disease. But I started saving money. And when I got my 9-month chip, I remember somebody said, 9 months, that's green for money. By now you should have some money saved. And I thought, I did. You know, and I don't even know how I did that, because I was in this program. I had to pay $1,000 for the scram. I was paying out, you know, probation fees, all these things. And it's like somehow I was starting to save money. There's just different things within the program where, you know, kind of my higher power looks out for me, you know, as I'm going through this, because now I'm on a venture to retire. And I remember I had to do some siding or something on my house. It was going to be $10,000. And I thought, oh my Lord, I'll never be able to afford that. I'm trying to save money, you know, every month and stuff. And, I went into work, and my boss, we had a client that was leaving, and, they wanted to make sure that their account was serviced correctly. And she said, you know, they agreed that if we service the account, they were going to give us a bonus over the next year, which amounted to $10,000. So it's like little things like that kind of worked, you know, it's like, well, something's working here. So it was very eye opening, you know, some of the things, you know, over the years. So now, you know, I just do what I can and try to stay involved in what I can. Keeping close, you know, I have a lot of friends in the program. Because, yeah, I don't ever want to go back to that. I don't like living in despair, not being able to sleep, not being able to feel comfortable in my own skin. You know, and I can do that today. You know, it's just so freeing. And my kids, you know, my relationship, you know, I've mended with my children, but I continue to do like living amends, you know, to be the better mother than what I was. And so, you know, we went to Disney like last year. This year we're going to a beach house vacation. So I'm like continuing on those living amends, but it is nice because it was things that I was never able to do, you know, when I was a single mother and that. And I have a 9-year-old grandson that, you know, even when he was young, I was still drinking for his like first, maybe, you know, 6 months of life. I remember having a picture at work of sitting on the outside patio with him on my lap, but there was a beer right next to us. You know, but he's now, that was only within the first, you know, like 6 months of his life. So he'll never see me, you know, drunk and, in that frame of mind. And so, yeah, I just, you know, you continue to grow. It's like the more you have, you know, you get more insight, I think, the longer you go. And the hardest thing is like looking at ourselves. But whenever I'm, you know, I feel that kind of icky feeling, I always have to kind of take a good look at like, you know, what's my motive and why am I feeling icky or this funky, whatever that funky thing is called, just don't feel right. And thank God for sponsors to kind of talk you out of it, because a lot of it is just up here. You know, it's just my own perceptions. You know, you know, there's again, I would take like one thing and project it for you know, project it out. And even just recently, it just reminded me of that. But I had a recent situation where I thought my parents were calling me about something my daughter had posted, and I was like so afraid, you know, I was going to have to tell them, like, look, it's none of your business, you know, I was going to have to set up a boundary. And, you know, I lost sleep over it, and how I'm going to react and what I'm going to say, and, you know, talk to my sponsor, you know, writing down, like, okay, this is what I'm going to say. And then if they say that, you know, the whole nine yards. And then if they come back, I'm going to say this, you know, I had all the angles and stuff. And, because they had been calling me, and when I finally called them back to find out what they wanted, which I thought was about my daughter posting, they just wanted to check to see how my birthday went. It's like, oh my Lord, we still go out there, you know, can still go out there, you know, years and years ahead. And so, yeah, so it's just been a blessing to be, you know, part of the group and part of the program. I want to, you know, continue to go to meetings and continue to have good friends. You know, it's just nice. I'm retiring like on Friday. You know, I was able to save up this money to retire early. And then just to be able to go and do whatever I want, because I'm not like tied down anymore by making sure there's alcohol like wherever we went, because otherwise how are we going to have a good time? You know, I'm free to travel, you know, and go see my parents and go any place I want, and do anything I want. You know, the world got smaller the more, you know, drinking had progressed, because it was no longer, you know, feasible to drive and do things, you know. It was like, well, I just have to stay at the house now. So your world gets smaller and your friends get smaller because, you know, those that aren't really alcoholics are out there, you know, enjoying life. But mine was just tied to, like, just those friends that were alcoholics, and we just continued to drink. And there's one other thing that resonated, too. Through that court program, I did end up having to spend a weekend in the Cherokee County Jail. Because I had taken some aspirin, and you're not supposed to take anything with alcohol in it, and it came up on the test and on my ankle. And I remember it was at Christmas, and I was just new to the whole DUI court program, and I was like sobbing, like, please don't do this, please, it's Christmas, and I have things to do, you know, I have to go shopping, and please, please don't do this. I never went to jail, and I was frightened, and but when I sat there that weekend, it's like, that's when it was like an eye opener. Like, what am I doing here? Like, I had to start really looking, you know, I'm 50 some years old and I'm in the Cherokee jail. It was like, something is not right. Something is definitely, definitely not right. So that was another kind of inside opening of the mind for me. But it's a very wonderful program. I'm probably ending early. it's a wonderful program. You know, that's just been kind of my experience, where I came from and what happened. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's my lifeline at this point. And and I just continuing to grow and trying to learn more, and, you know, more self-reflection. And, you know, it's not everybody else and not the whole world, but it is nice to live in that peace and serenity. So, thank you.